Gifts of the insects, the virtuous merits that I collect for the practice of giving and the new perfections.
May I attain the state of Buddha to benefit all sentient beings.
A refuge until I am enlightened, the Buddha is known in the assembly of things, the virtuous merits that I collect, the practice of giving and the other perfections. May I attain the state of Buddha to benefit all sentient beings.
May all beings
have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering.
May all beings never be separated
from the bliss which is sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion and clinging. The ground is covered with flowers and sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four continents, ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing this and offering it as a Buddha realm,
may all sentient beings partake in the Buddha's pure lands.
Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Sapparivada
Bhujana Sapparivada.
Welcome back. I said this before, I'm going to say it again. You'll probably hear me say it again and again in the future, but whatever that we get out of this tonight, I think we owe to Lama for having introduced this text to us and having commented on it so skillfully over a long period of time a few years ago. And so thank you, Lama. And also, our founder, Geshe Tashi Namgyal, whose picture is on the wall there, he also introduced this text and gave commentary on it. So it's a tradition here in the center. And there's some people here tonight that were students of Geshe-la, and I think probably everyone would agree that there's one thing that Geshe-la had, it was a sense of humor, to say the least. And when he was asked about that, he said, well, you know, people need happy. People need happy. If you get sad, then you might get depressed, and then you have a problem. And he was always emphasizing that. And so I thought it would be fun tonight to do a little review quiz, a little pop test. I don't know. When I was in school, we had pop tests. I always hated them. Did you have pop tests?
Pop quizzes.
Pop quiz, yeah.
I think
so just to kind of review, because Geshe-la gave a teaching one time where he gave the traditional teaching about the faults of the listener and the different cups. Mm-hmm. And one of the cups is a cup that has a crack in it and everything leaks out. So this will test your cup, I think. So just to lay down the ground rules for the pop quiz, the first rule is no cheating. You're supposed to be a Buddhist, so no cheating, okay. And close your books and turn them over, please.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And it's got my glasses on top.
And so if you know the answer, don't shout it out. Raise your hand, okay? Because this is going to be the honor system. You grade yourself. And we don't have a lot of traditions here in the West, but we do have one, which is the game show tradition. So this will be on the Jeopardy format. The first questions will be easier, and then they'll get a little more difficult, okay?
I have to answer with what is?
Well, it's silently, so if you want to do that, it's an honor system. So did everybody have their book turned over? So the first question is, what is the title on the cover? So if you know, you can raise your hand.
The Three Visions.
Three Visions, okay. Does everybody agree? So turn over. What does it say? Turn your book over. What does it say?
The beautiful ornament.
No, read it. It says, or does you have the old version, huh?
Yeah, the beautiful okay, well, ornament of the Three Visions.
What do you guys have?
It says Three Visions. Somebody want to read that? Can you read it?
The fundamental teachings of the Sakya lineage of Tibetan Buddhism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the title that the publisher put on the cover to sell the books. nothing against the publisher. We're grateful to them, but just so you know, this is the publisher's title.
But honestly, I think that's smart, because when I read that
this one,
I was like, oh, okay.
Okay. So if you answered that correctly, you give yourself 5 points, okay, on the honor system.
I didn't.
Okay. So now the next question is, who is the author and what is the correct pronunciation in Tibetan?
Is it Marcin Kumgan
Lungrup?
Oh, sorry.
Karen?
Yes. She's right.
Is it?
Yeah.
What is?
Could you say it, please, louder?
Norten Kunga Lundrup.
Okay, now we have a couple of Tibetan experts in here, so we're going to have Karen and Stephen judge. Is that pronunciation correct?
It's good enough, yeah.
Yep.
Good enough?
Norten Lundrup.
Okay, so 10 points for that one. 10 points for that one. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'll write that down.
Now, the next question, I'll warn you. Turn your book over, please. Yeah. No cheating. You're Buddhist. So, the next question, I'll warn you, is a trick question. Okay. What is the title of the text? Anybody want to give it a shot?
Is it the path with the result, or something like that? Is it like that?
Close. No cigar. So let's all look. Let's open the book to page. Well, there is no page, but where it says the actual title.
Path including its result.
A translation of the Tibetan text. Do you see that where it says that? It doesn't have a page number.
The translation.
The translation of the Tibetan text, the beautiful ornament of the three visions, an exposition of the preliminary practice of the path, which extensively explains the instructions of the path, including its result, in accordance with the root treatise of the Vajra verses of Virupa. That's the actual title. Yeah? So, I'm guilty as much as anybody of just saying the three visions, but that I just want to point out that's really not actually the title of the text itself. It's the beautiful ornament of the three visions with the other words to it. And when Lama gave this commentary, he always said the beautiful ornament of the three visions. So, I lived in Italy a long time, and they have a saying, when the thoroughbred can't run, you ride the donkey. So, thank you for Lama for pointing out that's the beautiful ornament of the three visions. It's not just the three visions, okay? It really is a beautiful ornament. So, why do you think I made that point?
I was going to say, because you're cute? I don't know.
Because
you're cute. I don't know. Like it's joyful. It brings joy to point that out, which makes you cute. Anything that's cute is kind of cool.
Okay.
That's what I mean by that.
Thank you for explaining that. Yeah, this really is a very, very special text. It really is a beautiful ornament. You know, it's not just another Buddhist book that you read and put back on the shelf. You know, it's 500-year-old wisdom, you know, and you notice I even put a brocade down here, you know, just out of respect. So I just want to remind us, myself first of all, that this is really something very special. And to be here even is a really amazing, auspicious occasion. Okay, so did you total up your points? Okay. So thank you for having a little fun with that. So let's just very quickly review where we're at with this. So the goddess Narotmya transmitted the Lamdre to Virupa, and there was very, very little written down about it until Sachin Kunga Ningpo came along, and he wrote 11 commentaries on it. And then over time, other people wrote commentaries, and it was sort of organized and edited and so forth. until it arrived to the form that it's in today, the common and the uncommon Lamdre. However, Sachin Kungan Ningpo's son, one of his sons, Drapa Gansi, one of my heroes, he made it really simple for us. He divided it just into two simple parts, the preliminary part and the practice part. And the preliminary part has two chapters, faith and refuge. So tonight we'll be starting on the chapter on faith. So that would be page 4 in my book. I don't know the blue book if that's the same number or not.
Yeah.
It is?
Yeah. It's pretty similar to that other, the newer version.
So does anybody remember at the end of the class last time Erin's question?
No.
I was hoping she would be here, but does anybody remember what she asked?
No.
She said, "What's the homework?"
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I never asked for homework when I was in school, but she did, okay. And we talked about listening, contemplation, meditation.
Yeah.
So, this text can be used in that format if you want to use it as a meditation manual. It's a good way of reviewing the lessons, yeah. So in the chapter on faith, so one of the things that we talked about with Aaron's questions was when you do the contemplation part, you want to think about what the lesson was, you want to analyze it, but you also want to think about what it wasn't. Make sure you're clear about what it was and what it wasn't. So when we talk about faith, in this context, what it isn't is blind faith. Okay? The Buddha was very clear about that. He wasn't interested in blind faith. He wanted people to test it. Like a gold merchant would test gold before you make the purchase, right? So, we're going to find out now what faith is, how you keep it, how you gain it, how you keep it, avoid the problems with it. There's going to be an extensive discussion here. But to summarize it very briefly, His Holiness the Gongme, the Sakya Trichin, 41st Sakya Trichin, said, faith is everything. And I think what he meant by that, remember we talked about if you're going to build a tall building, you need to have a good foundation. And I think that's kind of what he meant, that it's important to have that good foundation. Otherwise, especially living in an earthquake zone like we are. So, going to the text, it says, first, the disciple who is to be guided according to these three visions, and you notice three visions is in quotes there, is one who is endowed with faith. For, as it was said in the Ten Dharmas Sutra, just as a green sprout never springs from seeds that have been scorched by fire, so no virtues will arise in people who have no faith. Mm-hmm. So, without faith, we have no virtue. What's another word for virtue?
Merit.
Power. Merit, yeah. So we need merit, accumulation of merit. And then the author goes on to say, if one lacks faith, then the very foundation of virtue does not exist. There's your foundation again. And as a result, one will not seek the path of liberation. So you won't even look for it. You won't even try. You won't even go, you know, in search of liberation. For such a one, the good qualities of the noble ones will not be gained, nor will one obtain the blessing of the preceptor and the three jewels. So just again, who are the noble ones?
The Buddhas.
The Buddhas, yeah. And who are the preceptors?
Oh, the lineage holders.
The lineage masters, yeah. And who are the three jewels?
The
Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, or the assembly, the noble assembly. Thus, faith is truly of utmost importance for the practice of Dharma. That sums it up right there. As it was said in the Precious Light Sutra, or the Precious Lamp Sutra, would somebody like to read that quotation loudly and clearly? Any volunteers?
I'll volunteer.
Okay.
Faith goes before and, like a mother, gives birth. It causes all virtues to rise and grow, clearing away doubts and crossing the rivers. Faith symbolizes the city of happiness. Faith makes the mind unsullied and pure. It casts off pride and is the root of reverence. Faith is a treasure. It is wealth, the most excellent feat. And, like hands, the sheaf means of gathering virtues.
Okay. So what do you think that means, like a mother who gives birth? It goes before like a mother who gives birth.
Maybe like she trusts the process.
She what?
Trusts the process of the body and everything. The habit of doing that.
Okay. What does it give rise to? What does it give birth to?
Trust.
The next line, what does it say?
Gives rise to virtue,
okay, to merit. And it clears away doubt. And crossing the rivers, we talked about this before. What does that refer to? The rivers.
Oh, didn't we say last time that it was like thoughts and things that were like clouding the mind?
Yeah, that's one way of talking about it, but here we're going to cross it. What are we crossing?
Are we crossing its potency? Like every river has force, right? Like water has a momentum. So are we crossing or avoiding that? Is that what you're going for?
So where do we find ourselves? We're sunk in the ocean of
samsara, suffering.
So we cross the river or we cross the ocean. And also, what did Virupa do?
Oh, he parted the
the water. He parted the Ganges, didn't he? Yeah. Okay, and then faith symbolizes the city of happiness. We talked about that too. What does that refer to?
Enlightenment.
Yeah, that's the goal, the enlightenment, right? Faith is a treasure, it is wealth, the most excellent feat. That's kind of unusual. What does that refer to?
Like your foundation, because you can stand on your feet all day long and hold them yeah. up.
Especially if you work for the post office, right?
Yes, and any other place.
Okay. Okay, so what do we use our feet for, usually?
Walking
on the
ground.
Spiritual
path,
on the path, right? Right? And like hands, the chief means of gathering virtues. So there's all these images of rivers and feet and hands. Okay. Now, that's nice, but what is faith? If it is asked what exactly faith is, the Abhidharma Kosha explains. Now, the Abhidharma Kosha was written by Vasubandhu around the 4th or 5th century. And sometimes that's translated as treasury of knowledge, but Stephen's an expert on Vasubandhu, so I asked him before class, and he said he thought it was treasury of insight. But in any case, Vasubandhu is a very important historical figure in Tibetan history, along with his half-brother Asanga. So this is what what he wrote. If it is asked, what is faith? And he says it's three things, okay? So faith is, one, the full confidence in the efficacy of deeds, parentheses, karma, and their result, comma, in the truth, and in the three jewels. Now, all of that is number one. Even those few things listed there, that's all number one. Number two, it is also an aspiration, in parentheses, for spiritual attainment. So that's number two. And clear-minded, parentheses, appreciation of the truth. That's number three. So, what does that mean? It's a little bit pithy, but he doesn't tell us. Vasubandhu doesn't tell us. So like a lot of these quotations and a lot of these sections in the text, we have to either go to another text or rely on the commentary or find another source. Otherwise, it remains a little bit kind of vague. So where are we going to find that? So if we want to use an image that Vasubandhu showed up at your front door with a suitcase, okay, and outside it was labeled faith, and then on the name tag it had all of this on it, you know, confidence, clarity, aspiration, you would read it and you go, well, that's interesting, but I'd like to know what's inside that suitcase to really know the deeper meaning of this, but, oh, it's locked. Now what? We need a key, right? So, fortunately, I can find my notes here. Oh no, where's my notes? Here they are. So fortunately, on June 5th, on 2019, in Walden, New York, in the Great Temple there was a Lamdre taught that I was fortunate enough to attend, given by His Holiness the 41st Sakya Treason. And on the second day, he gave us the key to Vasubandhu's luggage. And he gave the teaching on what this means. So what he said is this. His Holiness said that the first faith, which is called confident faith, is very logical. So in other words, it's not blind faith, it's logical. And what is it logical about? It's an analysis of these topics. The law of karma, okay, which is an extensive topic. It's an analysis of dependent origination, which is another extensive topic. And in Vasubandhu's text, he says, the truths. Now, what do you suppose the truths would be?
The nature of reality.
For a Buddhist. What was the Buddha's first teaching?
Did you hear her?
What was the Buddha's first teaching?
The Four Noble Truths, right?
Yeah. So His Holiness said it's an analysis of the Four Noble Truths, suffering, cause, cessation, and path. Okay, another extensive topic. And it's an analysis of the Three Jewels. Okay, the Buddha, who's not only the historical Buddha, but all the Buddhas. The Dharma. There's two parts to the Dharma. What are the two parts to the Dharma?
Wisdom and compassion.
The teachings and the realization of the teachings.
The teachings and the realization. So remember we said it's not enough to get nice medicine and put it on the shelf. You have to take it. So we get the teachings, but we have to do the practice to get the realizations. So those two things are the Dharma. When we say Dharma, that's what we mean. And then the Sangha or the community. There's also two kinds of Sangha. What are the two kinds of Sangha? There's different ways of talking about these things, but there's the noble Sangha, the Arya Sangha, who are the very, very high bodhisattvas that are really advanced on the path. Yeah, they're almost enlightened. All kinds of incredible qualities. And then there's the regular Sangha, which is anybody who's more advanced than you. Anybody who signed up before you did. That's the Sangha. But actually, in kind of regular conversation, when we say Sangha, we very often mean us. You know, anybody who's a student or a practitioner. So it's good to know those. So that's confident faith according to His Holiness. And then the second one, which Vasubandhu calls aspiration, His Holiness called eager faith. Eager, E-A-G-E-R. Eager faith. Interesting word choice. And then He explained that to mean that once we see the immense and wondrous qualities of the three jewels, we really want to attain them. So we aspire, or we have eagerness. It's a, yeah. So when we study and learn and practice all these different immense and wondrous qualities, we're really inspired, or and we aspire, we're eager. And then the third one, which Vasubandhu calls clear-minded, His Holiness called vivid or clear. And that follows the previous one, which is, once we see these qualities, these wondrous qualities, our mind becomes refreshed. Isn't that wonderful? And all of our doubts are removed. So, and our faith becomes unshakable. So this is His Holiness's key to the suitcase of Vasubandhu. And, you know, I used to live in Europe for a long time, and there's this incredible train system in Europe, and there's these incredible train stations in Europe, because you can go anywhere and lots of people use it. And they're really incredible, but there's also thieves in the train stations sometimes. And they have all different kinds of tricks, and one of them is they work in teams of four. So you're walking along with your suitcase and your new Armani sweater that you just bought as a souvenir before you come back to Canada. And one of these thieves will come up to you, and they'll have a triple-decker ice cream cone, you know, vanilla, chocolate, strawberry, and they'll deliberately just smear it all over your Armani sweater, deliberately. And you'll be in shock. They'll run off. And then thief number two comes along and pretends to be your friend. Oh, I'm so sorry. Let me clean it up. And, oh, that was terrible what that person did. And by doing that, what do? They distract you. And then what do you do with your suitcase?
You put it down,
because your Armani is all ruined. And then thief number three comes along, and what do?
They
grab your suitcase, and they are an Olympic sprinter, and they're off to the races, and it's out the door of the station. And then it doesn't end there. Thief number four is waiting in the getaway car. Suitcase gets thrown in the car, and the car takes off, and that's the end of it. Now, Vasubandhu's suitcase also has four thieves, which we will now read about. So a person endowed with these three kinds of faith, clear-minded, appreciation, aspiration, and confidence, will not forsake religion due to the four usual causes of leaving it. The four thieves. These four causes of leaving religion are desire, anger, fear, and ignorance. Does anybody notice anything interesting about that list of four thieves?
Desire is first.
What would happen if we took out fear from that list? What would be left?
Oh, the three poisons.
The three poisons that we talked about, I think that was last time, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. And they all come from ignorance.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So, the three poisons plus fear are the thieves of faith. One who does not forsake religion through these four is one whose faith is unbroken by Mara's deeds. And we talked about Mara. How many Maras are there?
Four.
Four, right? How's your cup? Is it holding up or is it leaking? Okay. So not to forsake religion through desire, this is the first one, means that through knowing the faults of attachment. Remember when we listed the three poisons, some of them had slashes? We had, do you remember? We had desire, slash.
Aversion?
She said aversion.
I heard her, but I didn't.
Sorry.
Desire, slash, greed, or something, No?
Well, if you read it here, it says attachment. It was desire, slash, attachment. So here it is in black and white, right?
Yeah.
So page 5.
Okay.
Okay, so through desire, so not to forsake religion through desire means that through knowing the faults of attachment, one will not renounce religion even though one knows one can gain a kingdom or the like.
Right.
What does that mean? Anybody?
The things in samsara are no longer appealing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if I gave you the whole kingdom, this is old language, or $1 million or $1 trillion or whatever, you wouldn't give up your faith in exchange for that. You wouldn't make the proverbial devil's bargain.
Yeah.
Right? And as Lord Maitreya taught, now who's Maitreya? Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that Tonka there is Maitreya, isn't it?
Yeah.
So who's Maitreya? Anybody know?
He's the next Buddha in line.
Next Buddha, the coming Buddha next in line. So what does that mean?
Well, there are different aeons during which the Buddha is appropriate to the problems of that age manifest in various ways. And so he's seated, which is like someone's seated is sort of from a different culture from those who are standing or sitting cross-legged. So there's something mysterious about him, sets him off from the Buddha Shakyamuni.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. There are other differences as well.
Okay, thank you. So in one of the sutras, there's a list of 1,000 Buddhas in this time period who will appear. And Maitreya is the next one, as Karen said, after the Shakyamuni Buddha, the historical Buddha who walked the earth in India and Nepal. And he's the next one. But how do we know, if he hasn't come yet, how do we have his text?
That's mind-blowing.
So that's an interesting story, which is very long. We won't go into the whole story, but Vasubandhu had a half-brother named Asanga, and through a lot of practicing, 12 years of retreat, he was able to actually meet Maitreya and go to the heaven where Maitreya lives, and Maitreya transmitted 5 texts to Asanga, and Asanga brought them back. And we now have those texts. Amazing story. And this is all told in Clarifying the Sage's Intent by Sakyapandita, which is another text that we did here one time. So we have some of Maitreya's teachings. So Maitreya taught... could somebody read that section for us, please? Please. Otherwise my voice will go out.
I can read it again, if nobody else wants to.
Oh, we have a shy group here tonight. Okay.
Though they win them not, the greatly deluded seek worldly ephemeral pleasures. Steadfast seekers of liberation renounce such. Though they might gain the riches of a perfect kingdom.
Okay, so this is a scriptural authentication, I guess you would say. It's giving scriptural basis for what the author is writing. So just to show you, he's not just, you know, cooking this up, dreaming this up, and making it up, but there is actual a foundation for it. And of course, this book is just chock full of scriptural references. So in effect, it's saying the same thing. But the interest, I think there's an interesting line here, though. The first line says, though they win them not. Mm-hmm. So worldly people who work for worldly ends, you know, money, fame, power, cars, whatever your goal is, do they always attain those?
No.
No. Sometimes they waste their whole life and they don't even get those. So they seek worldly ephemeral pleasures. What does that mean? What is ephemeral?
They don't last.
Doesn't last. It's in Buddhist terms we would say
empty.
Impermanent. No matter, even if you win the lottery, become the richest person in the world, conquer outer space, whatever it is you do, you die, it's over, that's it.
But that also refers to, like, states of mind, right? Like, it's not just the physical aspect of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate?
I guess the physical and the mind are also connected, but, like, nothing, like, what is, like, what lasts in this life? Like, what lasts? I don't know. Do you? Like...
Not much.
Right. It's like, well, what is the same, you know?
Your thoughts don't even last.
Right. And, like, even moments of peace that I may have sometimes don't last, right? Or, like, moments of anger and just everything doesn't last.
Exactly. So when Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths and the truth of suffering, how many kinds of suffering are there?
Three.
What are they?
The suffering of suffering, the suffering of change, and...
suffering of conditioned existence.
Yeah. So which one is this one?
The suffering of change.
Change. The suffering of change. So even if you win the lottery, become the richest person, when you die, you don't take it with you, it's going to change. Or even if you gain whatever power or whatever it is your ephemeral goal is, at some point it's going to end.
But isn't it more about if you win the lottery and you think, now I'm finally happy... It's the happiness that doesn't
also
isn't permanent. You
also
can have the money, but it doesn't keep you happy all the time.
Right? Yeah,
the
yeah.
happiness is fleeting.
Yeah,
that's also one of the points of suffering of conditioned existence.
There's, right,
there's four points described.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, not to forsake religion through anger. Means that, as was said in the Bodhicharya Avatara, this is the famous text by Shantideva, Guide to Entering the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. There'll be quotations from that book a lot in here because it's such a famous and amazing text, which Lama Jampa also taught us. So what does Shantideva say? Can somebody read just the first paragraph there?
By a single fit of anger, all the merits of thousands of eons gathered through good deeds, such as generosity, worshipping the Sugatas, and the like, are destroyed.
Okay, thank you. So this is a fairly famous quote by Shantideva. So thousands of eons, Lama one time gave a long discourse about all the different kinds of eons and how long they are and everything. But suffice it to say, an eon is a really, really, really long time. Okay, so if you have a single fit of anger, all the merit of thousands of eons gathered through good deeds, such as generosity, worshiping the Sugatas. Who are the Sugatas?
The Buddha.
The Buddhas, yeah. And the like are destroyed. So it's such a strong negativity. It'll destroy your merit. And then the next paragraph, can somebody read that, please?
Sure. No sin is there like anger. No penance is there like patience. Strive, therefore, in various ways to become practiced in forbearance.
Okay, so the first paragraph is the problem. The second paragraph is the solution. Now, this word penance, when I lived in Italy, I did some translating, and it is not easy. And I can't even imagine doing it in Tibetan. So it's not my intention to criticize the translators here, but I'm not sure that that's the best word there. I would say there's no practice like patience. Because for me, growing up Catholic, penance has a different meaning entirely. Mm-hmm. So just so you know that probably a good meaning would be there's no practice like patience. Mm-hmm. Strive therefore in various ways to become practiced in forbearance. What is forbearance?
Patience.
Tolerance. Yeah, it's like restraint, right? It's like, don't lose it and get mad. I had an incident on the bus where I was just sitting there minding my own business, and I was sitting down and the bus was full and there was a guy standing right in front of me, and all of a sudden he just started screaming in my face, literally like this far away from me, spitting on me and everything, and he was falsely accusing me of something that I wasn't doing. I was just sitting there minding my own business, but he was having a some kind of episode. And fortunately, I was able to just keep my cool and just sit there. Fortunately, a young man, a bodhisattva, intervened and calmed this guy down and got him to the front of the bus, away from me, and saved the day. But what would have happened if I'd have, you know, jumped up and said, oh yeah, buddy, yeah, right? So that's a personal experience where forbearance came in handy. Okay, so through knowing the faults of anger, one will not renounce religion, because by giving up religion through anger, one is harmed rather than harm being done to one's enemy. There's a saying, getting angry is like taking poison and then expecting the other person to die. Okay, so that's number two. Number three, not to forsake religion through fear means that even though someone might say, I shall kill you if you practice in accordance with religion, or I shall rob you of all your possessions, still one would not forsake religion, knowing that the terrors and suffering of this life hardly amount to a fraction of the anguish of the hells and the other states. This is not a theoretical discussion. There are people today in places like Tibet and China and lots of places in the world who are literally threatened with death if they practice religion. We're really fortunate here, but some people really have to deal with this issue. And as it was said in, again, the Shantideva's work, can somebody read that, please? Anybody?
Were all gods and demigods my foes, they could not lead me into unceasing hell's flames, united with which not even the ashes of Mount Sumeru would remain. Yet there I am hurled in a moment by this mighty foe, the afflictions.
Okay. So, we're soon in this text we're going to be talking a lot about the hell realms. So I don't want to get too into it now. Sometimes people have a reaction to that topic. We'll deal with that soon. But what is this Mount Sumeru, or some people say Sumeru, but where is that? Is that on Vancouver Island, or what? Where is that?
It's in the center of the concept of the world.
Uh-huh. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's an Indian concept, is it not? The Indian cosmology goes back ancient times. Mm-hmm. So, we won't get too distracted by that, but you'll hear that if you do the, for example, the offering of the mandala. There's Mount Sumeru in that, and it's used a lot. It's a really big mountain. Okay. So that's number three. Number four, not to forsake religion through ignorance, means that, as was said, again, by Shantideva. Can somebody read that one, please?
Even as a man afflicted by illness is helpless in all his actions, so too a mind afflicted by ignorance is powerless in all spheres.
So what do you think that means? Anybody want to take a guess at that? A mind afflicted by ignorance is powerless in all its spheres.
Wasn't that the teachings of, if you're ignorant of the Dharma, that essentially you will just go around in samsara and that's where you remain?
Yeah, yeah. What's the worst sin?
Killing.
Hmm?
Killing.
Is it?
The worst sin?
Does that include killing like spiders and silverfish? And
all sentient beings.
Mm-hmm. So that is the worst sin.
Killing your mother or father.
Ignorance is the worst sin, and as it says here, if you're ignorant, you're powerless. It's the source of everything. You can just, your lack of understanding what's right and wrong, and what is the nature of reality is the cause of suffering. Ignorance is the root.
So ignorance is actually the cause of having the conviction that killing is taking place.
Oh, okay.
Oh, because there's a rebirth?
Because there's a truly existent event before you. So you're truly existent. This is the ignorance. And the person you're killing, or the thing you're killing, is truly existent. And that's ignorance. So you actually believe that there's someone killing and someone being killed, which is ignorance. So you're actually being driven to that act through ignorance.
So realizing that ignorance of what should be accepted as wholesome and what should be rejected as unwholesome is a cause of downfall, then for the sake of learning the respective areas of acceptance and rejection, one should rely upon spiritual friends. So who are spiritual friends?
Sangha.
Huh?
The Sangha.
The Sangha, the teacher, the guru, those are our spiritual friends, right? So we want to rely on them. After the manner of those stories in which the youth Shri Sambhava and the maiden Srimati narrated to Sadhana. Now, that refers to the Flower Ornament Sutra, which is a long, long, long sutra that has lots of stories and so on and so forth, if you're interested. Again, there's outside reference that kind of elaborates this point. But the point is that further, by studying the sutras and in other ways, one should comprehend the whole range of good and bad deeds in order to avoid forsaking religion. So in other words, go do your homework, read up on it, find out what's good, what's not good, you know, get really clear, listening, contemplation, that's your contemplation part, right? Well, it's listening and contemplation. As it was said once again by Shantideva, one should learn how to rely upon preceptors. According to the story of Shri Sambhava, the way is to be known by reading this and other discourses of the enlightened ones. So in other words, this is the scriptural reference for what the author just said. In brief, a person who is not caused to forsake religion through these four factors that are antagonistic to it is a worthy vessel of this doctrine of liberation. So going back to Geshe-la's teaching about the cups or the vessel, what kind of cup would that be? Even if you didn't have the teaching, well, you could probably guess.
A cup that's half full?
No. Well, that's another cup.
Would it be a cracked cup or would it be a whole cup?
No, right.
It would be a whole cup. Would it have poison in it or would it be clean? Yeah, so that's another one of the examples is don't have a poisonous cup full of wrong views and so forth. So a clean, whole cup, in this case, a worthy vessel. So clean your cup and patch your cracks. Like the Japanese do, right? They have a whole art form, right?
They do it beautifully with gold, right?
Yeah. Hence, it was said in the Ratnavali. The Ratnavali is the precious garland by Nagarjuna, another very famous and important Buddhist historical figure, philosopher, practitioner. And what did Nagarjuna say? He said, one is called faithful and the excellent vessel of the teachings of emancipation who does not relinquish religion through desire, anger, fear, or ignorance. Mm-hmm. So this is, again, this is a scriptural reference, a scriptural... So what are the teachings of emancipation? What does that mean?
The teachings of the Dharma, the Buddha's teachings?
Yeah, what's another word for emancipation?
Liberation.
Liberation, yeah. Okay, so this is just, again, giving scriptural validity of these four thieves that want to steal your suitcase. Therefore, understanding that faith is the root of all good qualities, one should pray to the preceptors and the three jewels so that faith will grow and not be wasted. So praying, devotion, helps it to grow, right? The blessings of the Guru. Also through reflecting on the practice, there's your contemplation again, and inspirational deeds of the holy persons, reading the pure sutras. By the way, just reading sutras is a practice in itself done with the correct motivation, just reading it. Sometimes there are group readings. Reading the pure sutras, abandoning sinful companions, and associating with religious friends who practice self-restraint, one should train oneself in methods that cause the field of faith to become extremely fertile. So we not only want to stay away from the thieves, but we also want to grow our faith, okay, cultivate it. Therefore, as it was taught in the... Now this, I believe, is translated as the Compendium of Instructions, and this is also by Shantideva. It's not as famous as the other texts, but it's an important text that he wrote. And so the quotation here is, one who longs to put an end to sorrow and to reach the sublimity of happiness must make firm the root of faith and steady one's mind for enlightenment. So if you want to get away from the suffering, which we all do, and if you want to be happy, which we all do, what do you need to do? Well, for sure you need to make sure you have firm faith, because that's, you know, as we've said, It's the foundation. And if you don't have a strong foundation in an earthquake zone like samsara, your condominium falls over. Okay? Steady one's mind for enlightenment. Okay. Therefore, to help... So how do you do that? To help the faithless... sorry. To help the faithless to gain faith and to strengthen the faculty of faith in those who already possess it, what do? We want to study carefully the biographies of one's own lineage of spiritual preceptors. Now, in this case, who would that be?
Would be our five founding fathers.
What lineage is this?
Sakya. Sorry.
What part of Sakya?
The Sakya lineage.
The Sakya Lama Dre. It's the Sakya Lama Dre lineage. Okay, so if you study the...
Sorry.
If you study the lineage of the Lama Dre Masters, holy cow, you'll be okay, right? And we want to do that, okay? So specifically, I mean, all these lineages are good. Nothing against the other lineages, but we're dealing with something very special here, folks. Mm-hmm. It's the Lama Dre. Okay. So we want to study the, the Lama Dre lineage. Masters, and now I've lost my place.
Okay, I've got a question for you now. Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Okay, Ngorchen Kunchok Lundruk, who wrote this, who is he? Yeah.
He was, among other things, he was the abbot of Nor. You know, Sakya school has subsects. You have Nor, Sarpa, Zampa. Did I miss one?
Song.
Huh?
Song.
Song.
Oh. Yeah.
So there's subsects, and Nor is one of the subsects, and he was one of the very famous abbots of Lama Pri. Please correct me if I'm wrong. Of Nor, he was a great yogi. He wrote lots and lots of texts besides these. And he's a giant. He's one of the great masters of the 16th century.
Okay, and that was his time period, the 16th
century. He was born in 1497 and he passed away in 1557.
Okay.
So somewhere in there he wrote all a bunch of books and was... Yeah. And he also gave the Lama Dre 35 times, which is no small feat.
Wow.
If you figure he only lived like, you know, 50-some years and he gave it 35 times... He was busy.
Yeah.
And he had tons and tons and tons of students and disciples because he was just so good, so famous.
Great, thank you.
Thanks for the question. Okay, so we want to read biographies, study carefully the biographies of one's own lineage of spiritual preceptors, and also practice devotion, meditate, and pray with diligence to them. Now, I didn't get that right away. It took me a while to get that. But this devotion and praying for the blessings with diligence is really how the progression of the on the path happens quickly and effectively. So that's really important. So don't be like me. Get that right away. In conjunction with this, so also you should recite any prayer to the lineage of preceptors for which one has obtained an oral transmission. So we know what the lineage of preceptors are, but what does that mean, oral transmission?
Well, somebody told it to you.
Yeah, somebody actually spoke it. And who would that somebody be?
Your guru.
The guru or the lineage holder of that lineage. Sometimes it's also sometimes texts are also transmitted, the lineage of a particular text. So you have lineages and holders of texts, holders of practices. These are the preceptors who are, and by the way, these preceptors, they have to maintain the practice every single day. Mm-hmm. And this is unbroken going back to Buddha. I mean, if that doesn't blow your mind, I mean, that's amazing, mm-hmm. really. Mm-hmm. So these are living lineages, living practices. This is mm-hmm. alive. And when you get a transmission, you don't just get the words, you get the energy and the momentum of the centuries of masters practicing. I mean, if you've ever had one of these transmissions, sometimes they can be pretty strong, pretty amazing, the energy. So the lineage of preceptors for which one has obtained an oral transmission. So you should recite those prayers if you've gotten one of those transmissions. For example, Samantabhadra's prayer, you know, these different prayers or these different practices that are to be recited. And it keeps it alive inside of you.
Well, isn't it too also part of the mind training that it's you're making imprints in your mind with the words of these prayers and mantras, right?
The words and the energy, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are they usually not in English?
Sorry?
Are those prayers and mantras usually not in English?
Originally, like the transmissions are usually not done in English, but some of the prayers, for example, Samantabhadra's aspiration has been translated in English. It's a very famous prayer. So some of it's translated and some of it's not, but usually the transmissions are not in English. But it's not about the words, it's about the energy.
Unless they get translated.
So huh?
If you don't know, I have a question, but if you don't understand what you're saying, how could it be not about the words? Because your intention is much more important.
But you're not saying it, the master's saying it.
Oh,
you're getting the energy transmission of 2,600 years.
Yeah, which still, that's kind of a debate, though, that in order to understand and to have the enthusiasm, you got to know what's being actually said. So that's why a lot of it's being translated. So that people can actually understand what the teachings are saying, isn't that right?
We have to understand, Dharma's only been in the West like 50 years, 60 years, 70 years. Yeah. We're babies, you know. It took hundreds of years for it to get from India to Tibet, literally. So stick around, folks. You know,
yeah.
It's coming. People are.
There's
a huge amount of energy and money and effort going into translation right now. And it's coming, and there's lots translated already. When all us old folks started 50 years ago, there was almost nothing, I mean, really. And what was there was sort of, you know. So it's coming, you know.
And while you receive something, like, from a teacher, whether it's in Tibetan or if it's in Sanskrit or any other language, you can always get that translation in English later, after you've received the teaching. Yeah. And sometimes it is translated at the very time that it's given.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and one should also read and encourage others to recite them too. So I'm going to encourage you to recite them and read them too.
You just said that, yeah.
A person who is endowed with faith, as explained above, should cultivate it in a place like the one described in the Sutralankara, and I don't have the English for that. Does anybody know the English for Sutralankara? Anyway, it was written by it was written by Maitreya / Asanga. And here we get into this debate about, okay, Maitreya, he hasn't come yet. How could he write anything? Well, he gave it to Asanga, and then Asanga wrote it down. So sometimes people say, well, Asanga wrote it. And other people say, yeah, but Maitreya transmitted it. And so you have this sort of, these scholars, you know, worry about things like this. But anyway, we'll say Maitreya / Asanga is the author in the Sutralankara, which we don't have the English name for. Somebody like to read that paragraph, please?
Laura? Under mine.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, I'll read it. The place where the wise practice is an auspicious site, with abundant provisions, well surrounded with noble companions, and endowed with the requisites of the practitioner's well-being.
Okay, so basically the text itself just more or less repeats that, saying, so he gives the scripture first, but anyway, he repeats it saying abundant provisions means essentials such as alms and the like that are easily available. Auspicious site is one unfrequented by thieves, bandits, and the like. With noble companions means that one's friends do not contribute to the increase of afflictions and sin. And endowed with the requisites of the practitioner's well-being means that the place is free from crowds of people by day and noisy sounds at night. A beginner, it is taught, should dwell in such a place as this. How should he dwell there? He should be seated in the Vajra position. Vajra position is, most of these Buddhas are in Vajra position. Full lotus, I guess. And any other meditative posture, or any other meditative posture without reclining, slumping forward, leaning, and the like. As was explained in the, and I don't have the English translation for that text, but it was written by Kamala Shila in the 8th century. It's actually a conglomeration of three texts. I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce it, but what did Kamala Shila write? Does somebody read that for us, please?
Placing before oneself an image or drawing of the Enlightened One, the Bodhisattvas, or any others, one should perform whatever offerings and the like one can while being seated upon a very soft and comfortable mat, with feet crossed according to the way in which the Holy Varyokana sits, or else in the half lotus position.
Okay, so basically I think the point here is you want to treat this practice as something special and you want to find a special place. Now, if you're lucky enough to have a separate room where you live, a meditation room, okay. But even if you don't, you can find a corner or a cushion where where you'll be at peace. You won't be bothered, as it says, you know, lots of people in the day and the night and so on. So you want to be able to focus on what you're doing and really have it count, you know, and recognize the specialness of what we're doing here, the sacredness of what we're doing here. I think that's the point, you know, whether you're in the full lotus or not, I don't know, that's the point. I think it's really just to be in a situation where you've created an environment, as some people call the meditator's nest, you know, where you feel at home, and calm, and you can really focus on what you're doing. You won't be distracted. And some people say, yeah, but I got 5 kids. Well, go in the bathroom and lock the door and take, you know, a few minutes there. But and eventually the meditator's nest is portable. It's your own mind once you get good enough at it. Okay, but it's to really place some emphasis on setting up the conditions that you can have success. Yeah, does that make sense? Yeah. Just one little point for the scholars in the crowd. This text by Kamala Shila was the first text. Kamala Shila actually went from India to Tibet, okay? And he wrote this text, and it was the first text that was written in Tibet and then taken back to India and studied in India. So this was sort of the breakthrough of the returning the favor to the Indians who gave the Dharma to the Tibetans. So that's kind of an interesting.
Didn't Kamala Shila go to China and do translations of Nagarjuna's works there?
That I don't know, but if you say so.
I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I'll look it up.
Stephen, do you know?
That's what I heard.
You heard?
Yeah.
Okay, from a reliable source.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
He had a lot of forbearance for not doing any other tasks besides translating the works of Narayana, and some people thought that that was a mistake and that he should have translated other texts as well, but he had such reverence for Narayana that he wouldn't translate anything else because it was his priority to do that.
Interesting, I didn't know that, thank you. Okay, so that's faith, what it is, what it isn't, how to get it, how to keep it, how to make it grow. One of the two preliminary foundations for this part of the Lum Dream.
Thank you.
Any comments, questions, or complaints?
I have a I have two questions. The first is the Lum Dream. Like, that means, like, in the book, on what page is this? I think that's 17. It's at, like, where it talks about the person that wrote it, Norshe Kongre. It says...
What page?
I think it's 17.
In the Roman numerals?
Yeah. That's right, right? I'm not sure. And the point is... Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay, so there's on the bottom it says, having performed many meditation retreats, he realized this special view of the Lumdrim, known as... the non-differentiation of worldly existence, samsara, and liberation. That's what the Lum Dream means? Like, when you say Lum Dream, that seems so weird to... Like, so I'm trying to, like, understand what that means. What does that word mean, Lum Dream?
Lum Dream means the path with the result.
Okay.
Which is kind of a lot to say, and that's why we usually just say Lum Dream. Okay. But the literal translation...
roadmap with the destination.
Right. Lam is path, Dre is result.
But it isn't just the path and the result, it's the path with the result. And if you'll remember, if your cup is not cracked, it's also the reverse too.
Right.
Remember that? We talked about that?
Okay. Yes, I remember that.
And when we think of Tibetan, they often combine words and terms without something like with or without, right? They combine them together. So and sometimes give a whole teaching on the title itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so those two words, Lam and Dre, meaning path and result, but we have, like Michael said, path with the result. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And okay. Result with the path.
And the second question, if I can move forward, is what is the suffering of suffering? Like, what is that?
What is the suffering of suffering? That's a good question. Have you ever stubbed your toe?
Yeah.
Did it hurt like heck?
Like H?
Yeah.
That's the suffering of suffering.
It's the obvious suffering, whereas the suffering of change is like something
physical,
like...
physical suffering.
Or mental.
Emotional.
Depression, you might have several of them. Like, sorry. What if you stubbed your toe and...
Yes,
and
depression would be an example
of suffering, you know?
Got it. Yeah. Thank you.
It's where's usually associated with animals. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the suffering of animals.
Oh. Okay.
Suffering of change is the suffering of humans.
Yeah.
I see. Right.
And what was the third type of suffering you said?
Conditioned existence.
That's the term, just like that, conditioned existence.
Yeah, and there's four points describing it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it seems like there needs to be more 4 points.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is another one of those, you got to do home, you know, seek outside teachings to get the full picture of it. You know, can't put everything in the book kind of thing.
That's too much. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's good question.
Prerequisite reading to understand this.
Yeah.
You can also get it on YouTube.
Or I can ask you guys.
Thank
you.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Okay, so rather than start a new chapter, I think that would be a good place to pause. And if the Umze would lead us in dedication, mm-hmm. prayer. Sit be se le deva. Sam Thogmin Bolche, Ake Panam Ke Gyoche, Ke Dangan Panam Panyam, Bonne Bondu Bel Parjo, Jam Pa Pa Oji Tarkin Patam, Kundu Saldo Jayan Shin Shinte, Deta Kungi Jesu Dalukju, Gevya Dita Tanche Pratumu, Tu Sungje Pi Gyawa Tanche Ki, Noa Ganga Chotu Ngan Pagi, Tarchen Gevya Tsawa Diyunkya, Sankurcho Chirabdu Nuvargi Chak Savadam Chuching Shapadam Jesu Yirang Kushing Sovari Gewa Chung Zeta Giji Sakya Tam Chepe Ching Chachu Chirabdi. By this merit, may all attain omniscience, and may it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious. May it arise in all beings in whom it has not arisen. May it never decline where it has arisen. May it ever grow and flourish. In whatever way valiant Manjushri and Samantabhadra know how to transfer merit, so do I dedicate all my own virtues, that I may dream to be like them. Through this dedication, praised as supreme, by the victorious Buddhas of the past, present, and future, I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attaining Buddhahood. May whatever little virtue I may have gained from prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching be dedicated to attaining perfect happiness.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you all. Thank you.
Thank you.